session number 22076, Reel 2.
Frank Rosier, Reel 2. So, the regiment, I mean, how different was it in what you were doing in the regiment to what it had been like on the training wing?
We were talking about people going into different units. Mm. For the first time, you were among men, boys, similar ability.
Right.
We could, of the same mind, for want of a better word. And though some of them were still conscripts, quite a few of us are still volunteers. The first thing I noticed was one chap, and they got called the gypsy, whether he was a gypsy or not. And he didn't seem to wash, and he didn't seem to keep himself clean. And to this day, I was part of it. It was extremely cruel. They scrubbed him with scrubbing brushes. We were ordered to do it.
You were ordered to do it.
More or less, you know, gently persuaded, shall I say. But to this day, though, I thought, yes, he deserves it. And the lesson he learnt, and the rest of us were taught, if one of you is dirty, you'll all be dirty. If one of you gets a disease, you'll all get the disease. So you've got to be spotlessly clean. And it's surprising in what we went through, the mud when we were training, the rain, the you know, filthy at times, up to our neck in muck and bullets, or whatever, was that you kept yourself clean. You know, you were fastidious to it, you know, sometimes. And I mean, the favourite one of Sergeant Frayne is, have you shaved this morning? Yes, Sergeant. Well, next time, put a blade in the razor. I remember George Frayne for that particular. He's a Scots lad. And, you know, but we began to, and I think it's really of us today, you begin to live like a family. You can't be 24 hours a day sleeping together, working together, 7 days a week, 30 days a month, 12 months a year, without getting to know each other very, very well. And I think that's why when you see veterans looking at a gravestone, they often cry, because it is a member of a very important family to you. And, you know, a lot of people don't really understand that. Mm. And, in fact, that feeling, though we're all from different units in my branch of the Normandy Veterans today, still exists. If any of us are in trouble, you look to the Normandy Veterans to help you out more than the Red Cross, the Age Concern, or anybody else. They're more likely to help you out than you know, than anything else. So you begin to form a great team and begin to rely on each other a great deal, which
So, I mean, they started doing, I mean, training continued, obviously, but did you find that your initial training, had that given you a good enough start? You
know, yeah, maybe fit to do it.
And did you know as much as the regiment expected you to know by then?
Yes,
you know, when you arrived?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. Though the way they sometimes are carried on, as if you're an idiot, you know, I mean. But you began to learn, you actually got... the rifle that you were going to use, and I can never remember the number of that rifle. Well, I always remember the first one. Another rifle, and it was a different type of 303 rifle. And the 303, incidentally, it was a handy ammunition. I don't know if the Imperial War Museum must know this, but the 303 was used in both the rifle and the Bren gun. So the infantry soldier only had to carry one particular sort of ammunition, and I do that, it's the pouches where we carry them, and or the bandolier. And I ended up with a Sten gun, just a bit different, but that's another reason for us later on in the training. But we began to do more intensive sort of weapon training, more bayonet drill, more firing on ranges, using, and as we were on the cliffs at Chale on the Isle of Wight, we fired weapons out to sea quite frequently. You know, laid on there, it was easy to fire, safer to fire them out to sea.
So, were you firing at targets? Generally targets.
Yeah. And then we began to move into, there was quite a, near where the lighthouse is now, a chine, as they call them on the Isle of Wight, quite wooded one. And you would run through the wood with your rifle, and you would suddenly, a German, it was a carbon thing, or wood, would pop up and you'd fire at that, or bayonet it, or whatever you had to do. And we did a lot of that. And then it moved into more intensive stuff of crawling under live ammunition. They would fire Bren guns generally on what they called a fixed line, which they would put a tripod thing and fix the Bren gun to it. Though it would sweep backwards and forwards, it fired, you know, a safe level. But if you stuck your bum up too high, you got shot. It was that close. And we did take one or two casualties. Firing mortar bombs too, and you know, that's only the 2-inch mortar at that stage. There was a bigger infantry one, the 3-inch and the 4-inch, which as the rifle platoons we didn't use. They were the other sections in the battalion with the mortar platoons and things like that. So the weapon training got very, very intensive of what we were doing. Every Friday on the Isle of Wight, you turned out just after lunch. I used to think, should it be before lunch? But it was always after lunch. I mean, and I remember thinking as a lad, I wish they'd do it after lunch because you've got, you know, you're full of food. And we had to run, put battle kit, which is the small pack, your rifle, your Bren gun, your ammunition pouches full, your water bottle full, everything that you would have in the battle, and you had to run and walk for 5 miles in an hour. It takes some cars in the traffic jams to do that. Yeah, a mile. But
that's really great, isn't it?
And I mean, and it was no good you arriving. I think I explained at the end, it's no good you arriving on your own, because where's your section? You had to arrive as a section,
right,
all in the hour. Do you follow?
Yeah.
No good one man arriving, he'd be useless on his own.
Mm. So what did you do if someone was finding it really difficult?
You began to carry their weapon, carry their, so you got there together. You didn't want to have to be sent back to do it again.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you helped. And as I said, I was pretty fit. And struggled at first, but after 2 or 3 months of doing this every Friday, you know, every Friday, it was down by the church, form up, and off you went, section by section, at 5 miles. It was 2.5 miles to the holiday camp where B Company were, and 2.5 miles back. And you went round, and you went bump, 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 bump. Then running is hard enough, but somehow running and then walking, and then running and then walking, it's very, very hard on your shins.
Mm.
Very, very hard on your shins.
So what would you do? Run for 2 minutes, walk for 2 minutes?
Well, you were with your Lance Corporal, and your Lance Corporal would say, you know, right, trot or run or whatever the order was, and you run by the left, trot, and you all kept in step.
Really?
You know, the boots going. And then he'd say, right, quick march, and then you march, and you'd be marching very quickly. But, of course, you wanted to do it in the hour, because she had sent back to you, you know.
Have
so you,
you learned the light infantry pace? Had that been part of
no, I wasn't light. We were heavy infantry.
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
Light infantry, I look at them now and I think, oh, you're balmy. But yeah, I mean, Tony's mob, the DLI, they were light infantry. They were light infantry.
Yeah.
And
they're
generally little men.
Yeah.
They're generally little men, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, the bigger men. I mean, I'm not a big lad, but they tend to be smaller men in the light infantry in battalions. But that, again, you were being trained with the weapons, with everything, to be as a team.
Right. How much sort of battlefield tactics and field...
Quite a lot. By then, quite
really
a lot.
Coming,
quite a lot. We, I think the training idea was that you did things instinctively. I can only explain that to you that if a shell bursts now, I mean, you've never been in action, I don't think so anyway, and you've never been in action, a shell bursts quite clear now, so across the road, what would we do? We'd lay on the ground. That's what you do instinctively.
Mm-hmm.
So that also, to explain why that is, and they tell you to get down anyway, because a shell blast or a bomb blast goes up. So if you land on the ground, it's a safer place. And later in action, I had a shell two or three times burst 2 or 3 yards, nearer than that, 2 or 3 feet sometimes away. And it makes you deaf for 2 or 3 hours, but you're unharmed. Well, if one hits you, that's a different matter. But that's the sort of thing you did. So in the field training that you ask about, the Gloucesters probably trained different to the Somerset Light Infantry.
How is the Gloucesters different?
Well, I don't know, but this is the way we train. Right. So, you know, others in tapes will say they train differently. Yeah. But if you imagine we were going to attack, where defensive is easy, you camouflage your position, you stay hidden until the attackers arrive. But the attackers, you've got to find out where they are. And later you find out you've got to lose some men to find out where they are most times.
So you move across. Training, did you do patrols?
Yeah. Moving across a field, that you move across a field as a company or platoon, whatever you were working in that particular day. And you move across a field, and suddenly something will move in the hedge. You'd shout, "Hit the dirt," and then it turned out to be a sheep or a cow. Well, at first you'll laugh, "Oh, you silly idiot," you know. But in the end, you realise that could save your life. So then you put that into practice, and once you drop, I mean, sometimes a sonnet will move, it'll be another soldier doing it deliberately to make you hit the deck. And then there will be, you will belong to group A, group B, group C, group D, or one group, two group, three group. Sometimes I think we ended up using numbers, one group, two group, three group. And if you were in one group, I mean, you were all mixed up. You got up, the officer would shout out, "Ones." Ones would run forward 5 yards, hit the deck, roll over. Then he'd shout out, "Fives," and fives would run forward and fall over. You raise the roll over because if you get up where you've got down, he's zeroed onto you. So that's the sort, and you began to do that instinctively. To the extent that you went out on the morning, and what are we doing today then, Sarge? Sarge, "We did that yesterday, Sarge. You'll do it again today. And you're going to do it again tomorrow," you know, till you did something. And when you got into action, it paid dividends, quite frankly, because you came across a situation, far too lengthy to explain to you today, but you came into a situation and you did it without thinking. Or you heard a command and you bang, you know, you did it without thinking. So it saves your life. So it was fairly, very, but the whole thing was working to be as a team. They explain a battalion is roughly about 800 to 900 men, sometimes 1,000. That's made up of signallers, pioneers, mortar platoons, cooks, all sorts of admin boys, and the other fighting sort of things, brain gun carrier boys. And then the 4 rifle companies, and A, B, C, and D, I was in D. And they are really the sharp end of any battalion. Now, each company then is broke down into 3 platoons. So there's roughly 120 men in a company. Each platoon, about 30 men. And then each of the platoons is broke down into a section of about 8 men. Each section had 1 brain gun and, you know, a restful rifleman.
Yeah. Right. So you were doing the moving as infantry. What about the digging in and after yourselves when you're in the field? What did they teach you about that?
You were taught how to dig a slit trench. And this sounds strange. I think I occupied, in action, I occupied more German dug slit trenches than I did our own. You, as you were attacking, you very seldom got time to dig in. You found a hole. Oh, it's you. Particular way. I mean, yeah. There must have been occasions when we did do some sort of digging in, but I can remember really digging in. But we did a lot in training. Mm. I think, again, part of the physical fitness sort of thing, digging and various sort of exercises that you kept on doing.
Mm. What about camouflage? Did you...
quite a bit of camouflaging, really.
Using what and how?
Sort of twigs in your hat and things, things like that. Mainly concealment in the field, which are defensive tactics more than attacking. If you went out on patrols and that sort of thing. I think perhaps if I go off at a tangent to say that while we were there with the training, often gets overlooked, so it writes on me when I say it, I was sent away to Shrewsbury Ness to learn how to ride a motorbike, to drive a 1500 weight, and to fire an anti-tank gun, again at Shrewsbury Ness, which is in Essex, flying out to sea, where they had a boat out there.
So you went on this course while you were at Tails?
It was called an anti-tank course. Right. And so several of us were sent off on different courses. And then I was sent on to probably the toughest course I ever did. It was at Redcar. And again, that sounds big-headed, I was very fit and very athletic. And we arrived at this place and there was 36 of us in this course from all units, including commandos, I might add.
What was the course?
Patrols. How to do a patrol. I thought it was going to be 6 weeks of the most cushiest time I've ever had in my life. Don't you believe it? We arrived at the camp, which was a camp in a field, and the PTI, physical training instructor, came out, and immediately we were standing there, because by then we were trained soldiers and we stood to attention properly. And he immediately walked up and threw one of us on the ground. Unarmed combat. He said, now you may think it's strange I've done that. He said, I've nurtured your son. Put the bloke up. He said, from this moment on, consider yourself under attack. You'll be sleeping tent to a tent with 36 of us. I remember thinking that's going to be difficult. But, basically we're tent to a tent. And I advise you to take the advice that I've just given you, that you're on attack 24 hours a day. Thankfully, our tent did it properly. One of us stayed awake all night, in turns. One tent didn't. So the PTIs went in, stole their boots, and made them run around 24 hours for the next day without any boots on. Don't know about that night. To teach them the lesson that you're on attack. If you ate food, and you never ate food at a table, you were in the field all the time. You sat on the ground and ate your food. You sat back to back. You sat with your back to another chap. Because if you didn't, you sat on your own, you get your face pushed and you missed him. Quick as that. They were like lightning.
So they were watching you all the time. Were there lots of them, these PTIs?
We had two in our ten. Yeah, two, it was usually you got one to about 30, but we had two to 10.
Oh, really?
And they were, they were commandos. Yeah, they were commandos. But they had other commandos with us. Now, if I tell you out of 36, only 7 of us passed. And I was one of them.
Yeah.
And I'm that sort of character. You push my face in the mess, then you do that to me, I'll fight back. It's in me to do that. I'll see you to hell before I give in. And you were told, if you fight it too much, and it was, talk about 5 miles in an hour, that's a piece of cake.
It must have really got at you mentally, mustn't it?
That was the idea.
Yeah.
That was the idea. If I tell you that to do this, learn how to do a patrol, is learning how to act naturally.
Right. What do you mean by that?
Two men dressed in Gestapo uniforms from this unit walked about Piccadilly in the middle of a war, dressed with swastikas, skulls, and crossbones, complete German uniforms for 24 hours, went shopping, never got stopped once because they acted naturally. Mind you, there was Polish soldiers walking about, Danish soldiers, all sorts of different sort of uniform.
Yeah.
But nobody spotted it. It was swastikas and skull and crossbones, what the SS wore. And complete Gestapo type uniforms they walked about. Nobody stopped them. So you were shown this film of them walking about, and it apparently was true. And in action, it did work. We actually walked. I was sent on one of these special patrols with a sergeant to lift mines on the Orne Bridge. And it did work. We were given for that occasion our own paratroopers hats, tin hats, which are different to the Tommy hat which we normally wore. I like to have kept that, it was nice, but it took it off me. And which looked very similar to a German paratrooper. And we had camouflage on, which broke up the khaki and could make it look like field grey, I suppose. But really, you know,
what, you just walked on
and we just walked through a German village with German soldiers all over the show, smoking fags, hoping to God none of them spoke to us in German, expected a reply. None of us speak German. And we walked through, and not in a gang, two of us together, and then we moved across country that way. And it's very nerve-wracking. But, and there is a case of one of them doing a patrol in the reconnaissance wagon. And this is a true story. And he pulled up a crossroads where the German military police was directing the traffic. He could speak fluent German, this officer, and he got out of his scout car and asked the German sergeant the correct way to go to South Side. And the German told him. And that is true. Guards, he was a guard from the Guards Army. And, you know, I mean, this is the sort of thing that we were taught there. A very tough course, extremely
so
tough.
How would they teach you that then? Is there any way they did it, or do they make you walk normally in front of other people?
We went up into the... You had to survive on your own, and it was midwinter. And they took us up to Fort William, Scotland, in transport. Dropped you off, and the Yanks were on doing a scheme up there.
Oh, yeah.
And our job was to report back on what the Yanks were doing, and not be seen. Not be seen. You, if you were told, if ever a German spotted you, you don't fight. You just, yeah, because you know you'd lost your way. You know that was what you were told. And the same with the Yanks. The Yanks never spotted us. But, I mean, I robbed the Yanks blind because they only give us 5 days, and they give us very few rations. So I crept into the Yanks each night and robbed them blind of food and stuff. Crept off out again. So that's, you know, what we did. But the hardest part of that was surviving in the snow on your own. Quite cold and quite miserable, quite horrible.
They teach you how to do that.
Yeah, you're taught all how to do that.
So how do you do it?
How to survive. You live off the snow for water and stuff, obviously. You don't worry about water or anything like that. You must not light a fire because you'd be seen. And you virtually live off the land. And still, without... If there is 2 cakes, leave them alone. If there is 12 cakes, pinch one. Do you follow me? That's what we were told. If you, if a person had 2 cakes and one goes, you think, who had that other cake then? But if they had 12 cakes, I must have eaten one later on. You know. That's the sort of way you sort of learnt. Mainly still, you had some food and that you took with you. But you, for your 5 days, and some of them lived off that. But I didn't. I was quite near the Yanks, and I found it easy to creep in there overnight. Again, walk in. Hey, mate. Hello, chump. Hello, walk in. I didn't creep in, just acting as I've been trained to do. Hello, chump. Hello, mate. You know. Again, all right. Yeah, okay. So, straight into their mess hall, be given the food, and go out again. Well, I did quite well, actually. But nobody asked me what I was supposed to be doing there. It was acting as if I had every right to be there. Do you follow all that? I mean, sometimes I think, how the hell did we get away with it? But we did.
But it's true. So you won't, I mean, if someone's perfectly polite and normal and minding their own business, you don't actually go up to them and say, excuse me, what are you doing? Do you?
No.
Because they're obviously meant to be there.
When my father-in-law was alive, he lived in Highcliffe near Bournemouth. And he asked me to go down, and he had a big apex like I've got on his bungalow. And he said, well, I'll paint that for him and help him with the other painting. It was on some holiday. And, 2 or 3 days later, the police came and speak to me, you see. Mr. Bryant, can I speak to your son-in-law? Yes, certainly. So we went out there and he said, did you see anything when you were out there painting? I said, no. So anyway, he said, well, who went by? And I described this chap carrying a suitcase. And they said, oh, that's him. I thought, well, that's who, I said. So he said, the lady had a burglary up the road there. Now, just paying them, he just walked by. Anyway, it's surprising what you notice.
Yeah.
But I, that's amazing. Chap coming down on holiday, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting off that business.
That's it. So the patrol course was 6 weeks then, under canvas and being persecuted by these PTR.
Not persecuted, never cruelly
right.
treated, but hard. It was hard.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Did you know that a lot of people were going to fail? I mean,
no.
People realise.
No. You've got, I mean, in the initial chat up, as we always call it, they said that you'll find this pretty hard course to do, but you're in no disgrace if you say, I've had enough, I want to go.
Did anyone drop out?
Oh, yeah. As I said, only seven of us out of the 36.
Passed.
Well, didn't pass, stayed, of course.
Stayed. Oh, only seven stayed.
Yeah, stayed, yeah. Well, some were quietly said, you're not going to make it, chum, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so sent back to the unit without any disgrace. I mean, nothing went on your record, failed.
No.
You know, just sent back to the unit.
So you must have been quite proud of yourself.
No, two fingers to them to try. You know, I'm that sort of, you know, saw you off, you know.
Yeah.
Man, that's that Cockney in me, I think, coming out, you know.
So you went back to your unit, company.
Yeah.
And were you sort of, was it said that you were one of the few?
No, where you been? Or? You know, where you been? Oh, I've been on a course, patrol course. Oh, what's that like? Oh, pretty tough. Oh, right, another bloody holiday then, you know. Oh, yeah, okay. So what I'm point of making is several of us are sent on different courses, some to learn all different sort of things. Eventually, having got back from Redcar, we moved off the island, and to my complete astonishment, and everybody else's in the battalion, from the sick, the lame and the lazy, we marched from Southampton to Middlesbrough. In 10 days.
Really?
On the road, 10 days. Pretty tough. I don't know of the actual dates. Is it signed in the war dates? I think I didn't type that bit out. And then we came back to.
How long were you on the Isle of Wight? A long time?
A good 43, I joined February 40. I think we were off before Christmas.
Right.
Now, the 24th of March, we moved to Inverary, at Barrisdale, Clacton-on-Sea, Formsley, March.
So, going to Middlesbrough would probably be...
Round about Christmas time again.
Yeah.
As I said, it was after the snowy course, Redcar, quite near Middlesbrough. I virtually just come back from there. And we marched,
you
and marched, really thought nothing.
You just marched up
well, we didn't go...
Roads,
well, across fields. I mean, infantry. We don't say on the main road that
so
we go.
Went, yeah.
Yeah, and through and along, marching. The food came up and all sorts of things. And we got to Middlesbrough, where we did a big scheme, a very big scheme.
Was this your first scheme, or had you done...
No, we'd done several schemes. But this was a...
Coming across to the
generally battalion, brigade, but this was really the first divisional scheme, a really big scheme we've been into. We started doing a lot of this stuff now. Moving
so
in
where
with
were you billeted at Middlesbrough?
The campus. Again, it was cold. Again, it was snowing. And in the middle of this is, well, this middle of our mission is so important. Rosie? Yes, sir. Well, Rosie. I was Rosie by then. My nickname was Rosie. Rosie? Yeah. Yes, sir. Corporal or sergeant, yeah. What, you're back at battalion headquarters? What for? I don't know. You've been told to go back. All right. You know. And off I went back to battalion. And to my great delight, I was kept there on a signals course.
Really?
Learning how to operate infantry, the 38 set, the 18 set, and the 22 set. The 38 set was a new innovation, which we were being trained for, really, because they had the idea that each platoon could carry one, a 38 set, which is a small box-like affair with an aerial and earphones and a throat mic, because then you could have intercommunication between the platoons. It didn't work. It didn't work.
Why didn't it work?
I don't think...
Was it not clear enough? Or?
I don't know why, but they said it didn't work, really.
Right. Okay.
It didn't work. And it also company, you had, I mean, I had a Label 1 report, my signals, I remember to this day, you know, the RTOC, as it was called. But what I was so delighted by, I was out of that snow, and it was in the lovely warm tent, and, you know, and drinking cups of tea, and being trained how to use this thing. I mean, wonderful holiday island again, you know. While we were there, not in our battalion, I talked before about getting casualties with live ammunition. One poor lad, they had a smoke bomb, which is quite an noxious thing, really. And it came down straight on his head and killed him, actually killed the lad. And what unit it was with, I don't know, but we heard about it. So
that was on that scheme.
On that scheme. Yeah. So the point I'm making is it was, we took casualties, even training. Because
so you knew that, you knew there was danger?
Yeah.
You know?
Which made you extremely
play.
Careful.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. Well, as I said, we were boys, and we were learning it wasn't play. I think you've summed it up well. We weren't playing anymore. This is serious stuff.
Yeah.
So then we came back down to New Milton.
Right, I'll stop you there.
Yeah, we're coming back down from New Milton.
Okay. Frank Rosier, end of reel two.